Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. The late Dr. John Pratt says there are three churches of Mormonism. He says each church fulfills a special mission. We'll find out more about this prophecy in the Brazil group. Check out our conversation.
Because we're actually going to have real high priests. I am now a real high priest. By the way, I haven't said this, but I am actually now in the first presidency.
I knew we were going to get there eventually.
Right. A church has been started.
You're a first counselor.
I'm the first counselor in the first presidency of this church.
Can I ask how old Mauricio is by chance? I'm just curious.
How old? Yeah. He will turn 44 in December, I believe.
So he's about Joseph Smith's age when he died. When Joseph
I'm 6 years older. Yeah. And he is a seer. He is a prophet. There's a lot we can say.
Okay. So we've got, so Mauricio, tell me his last name again. I keep forgetting.
B-E-R-G-E-R, Berger.
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 Yeah, Berger. So Mauricio Berger is the prophet. You're the first counselor in the first presidency. Do you have 12 apostles?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not big enough yet. Think of the history of the LDS Church, of the Church of Christ that Joseph Smith started. 1830, there's two elders. And then there is a first presidency called in 1832. And actually, one of them dropped out. Jesse Goss was one of them, and nobody even knows that. And it's really 1833 that they have all three. 12 apostles are called in 1835, okay? And a patriarch's called in 1833, too, in December. And so the point is, we're just where we've called, the first presidency has been called.
Okay.
There's about three or four apostles.
And you've got three or four apostles. Do you have a second counselor as well?
Second counselor is in Miami, Florida. And so, and now they're just going to now ordain a presiding bishop, and he's in Missouri. Oh, it turns out the real United Order has to be in Missouri. Oh, and I've got to tell you something about the branches, the different branches of the church.
The restoration branches?
The restoration branches. This is really important. There's three main restoration branches, and the Lord has worked with all three of them. And each one is doing a job. Brigham Young, even though he wasn't a high priest, he did have the keys of an apostle. What's the job of an apostle? It's to spread the gospel over the world. What's the main thing the LDS Church has done? It's spread the gospel all over the world. The Book of Mormon's gone everywhere. That's wonderful. That's amazing. It's a true book. So that was the job of the LDS Church. Sure, they got off track on other stuff, okay? All right, sacrament's not perfect. This and that, there's something, you know. There's a whole story about linear succession, which is another story, and I'll just say it very briefly. Joseph Smith made it clear that his successor was to be his son, Joseph Smith III. He was ordained, anointed, and ordained in the presence of several people who testify of that. But he's only 11 years old at the martyrdom. Somebody had to be the guardian of the church until he was old enough. And Sidney Rigdon, he's known to have stood up and said, I'll be the guardian until that time. The big debate, you know, and then Brigham Young gets up and says that the 12 can be. They vote for the 12. But what happens after 3 years, that's in 1844, August 8th, In December of 1847, Brigham Young decides that he should be the president and convinces everybody that he should be, even though he's not even a high priest. And all the people, a lot of people said, you're not supposed to be the president. That's going to be Joseph Smith III. You're usurping power. That's when the reorganized church goes, and they understand lineal succession, which means the president should be a descendant of Joseph Smith Sr., either Hiram or Joseph. It could have been Samuel. Look at who should have been the guardian. Joseph Smith, it was going to be Hiram. Didn't work because he got killed at the same time. Well, then it's going to be Samuel, but Samuel mysteriously dies a month after, so he's gone. Next is William the Wild Man. Nobody's sure what to do with him.
You know, Bill Shepard did he's a Strangite, and he did a biography on William Smith, and he's like, I just don't like that man.
Well, I kind of like him, but I'm kind of a wild man. But anyway, nobody's sure what to do with him. And he came, and he was going to be the patriarch of the church, and he felt like his life was threatened, actually. So he goes over. So anyway, people knew it was supposed to be Joseph Smith III. And in 1860, when he is more like 30 years old by that time, 28 or something, it's 16 years after he's 11, I guess. Yeah.
So if he was 11 in 1844, 16, he'd be about 27.
About 27, 28. So see, that's about old enough. So the point is, church number two is a reorganized church, and it preserves the lineage of Joseph Smith. That's the main thing it's doing. It knows that the lineage
until
of Joseph...
Until 2000.
Until now. And they've done it surprisingly well. And the third church is...
Because they don't do lineal succession anymore.
I know, but they did
Wallace
it.
Wallace Smith resigned, and then... Right, he's still alive, though.
Yeah, right. But they went bonkers after a while. The only real one was Joseph Smith III. I mean, the others are descendants, so that doesn't mean they're all righteous and they're all real prophets. Joseph Smith III is a real prophet, and there's like 18 sections in the Reorganized Doctrine and Covenants that are from him. I want to tell you about one of his revelations. We rejected him as our president. Amazing revelations given to this man and the other church. But the point is, the LDS Church preserves the missionary work and spreads the word over the world. The Reorganized Church preserves the lineage of Joseph Smith, which is important. And the third church is the Temple Lot Church, and it preserves the Temple Lot. And they have hung on to that. The LDS Church sued them to get it from them back in, I don't know if you know that, about 1990 or so, the LDS Church tried to...
No, it was the RLDS Church sued them. Yeah.
Maybe it was the RLDS.
The RLDS Church tried to take over possession of
Maybe it was the RLDS.
And then the LDS sided with Temple Lot to prevent RLDS from getting it.
Oh, now that part I didn't know.
Yeah.
Well, in any case, no, but I've read, no.
You need to watch my Gene Adams interview.
Okay, I'll do that. But I remember reading what I read, and it didn't, what it said was that it was the brig, I was... I'll quote what I had understood, even if it may not be right. Because it was that Brigham Young, that the argument was, the reason that they lost was that Brigham Young never was in the first presidency, and the deed said that the Temple Lot was owned by the first presidency, and Brigham Young was never in that, and that's why they lost the suit, because the LDS Church never owned it. So that's how I'm remembering it. Now, I'm not a history expert.
Yeah, Gene Adams is the Temple Lot expert.
In any case, it's the Temple Lot did keep it, no matter who was suing them. So the Temple Lot people have kept the Temple Lot. The others have the lineage, and the Mormons have the... But they're all important. And right now, they're all coming together. The apostles in this new church are... Two of them are from the Temple Lot, and I think one is from Reorganized, and one is from LDS. Hmm. So they're coming together, and there's prophecies in Isaiah about this. There's a lot of interesting things. Oh, I'll tell you one. Let me slip in one confusing thing of prophecies that Mormons always... Well, that's... Maybe I shouldn't. Well, I'll just say it now that I've brought it up. So as a missionary, I'm out there quoting Isaiah 29, verse about 11, where it says there's a sealed book, and, you know, the one says, take it to the professor, and he can't read a sealed book. And then the one who's unlearned reads the sealed book. And as a missionary, I remember thinking, well, wait a minute. Joseph Smith never read the sealed book. He read the unsealed part of it, and I thought, oh, I'm probably just being picky, you know. I mean, there is a book that's sealed, and Joseph Smith read the part he was allowed to. And I thought, I probably shouldn't be all picky because maybe the Lord is, you know, sloppy in his language. And as I've studied as a scientist the scriptures, the Lord's not sloppy in his language. And if that's translated correctly, and the Dead Sea Scrolls verify that that's what it says. So what's going on? That's one, okay? And there's... I'm just saying that actually part of that is referring to Marisa, who's reading the sealed part. The one that goes with that is a chapter earlier, Isaiah 28, also verses about 10 to 11. And it says that the one who's going to bring forth this work is stuttering. It's either stuttering or stammering. I will bring forth with stammering lips. Joseph Smith did not have stammering. Oh, in another tongue. Stammering lips in another tongue. And I will provide us, I think there's something about provide a spokesman.
This is in Isaiah? Is
that Isaiah, okay. 28. We never quote that one because Joseph Smith didn't have stammering lips, and why would we quote that one? Well, Mauricio, no speak English. If he tries to speak English, it's stammering lips. And it's in another tongue. Anyway, I'm just saying a lot of these scriptures we've only sort of partially understood or skipped over make a lot more sense when you actually see the big picture. That's all, I've said plenty on that. Let's go back to...
Well, I have a question about the temple lot, if that's okay.
Okay, but I'm not an expert on that, but I'll do what I can.
Well, so I've heard that... I spoke with a guy that's a member of the temple lot, and he said it sounded like this Brazil group was trying to kind of take over the temple lot so they could build a temple there. Is that fair statement?
Well, yes. The temple lot is keeping it. I mean, they've never built a temple there. Why haven't they ever built a temple? Because they're waiting for the Savior to return and for the true things
to return. Well, they tried to in the 30s and then the Depression came.
I didn't know they had tried to. I didn't know that part.
Yeah, you got
to
see that Gene Adams interview. We got some good pictures there.
I'll try to look into that. But my understanding has always been that they're waiting until they receive the instructions, you know, from the
They're
Lord.
Just a poor group, actually. They don't have any money to build a temple.
Yeah, okay. So in any case... it is true that this new church is to reunite people who will accept it from all three of these branches. And if you want a scripture on that, I'll just say it here for those who want to look it up. Isaiah chapter 60, verse 13, talks about three different trees that are going to be planted near each other at the sacred site of the Lord, for his temple or something. And at the temple lot, there's the temple lot people here and the big building of the Community of Christ over here and the Mormon Visitor Center there, all write those three together. And see, we call churches trees. A branch, you know, the Israel is the olive tree. And anyway, those three trees in there represent those three churches. That's just been... Why am I telling you this? Let's go back. Oh, tell me your question again. So building the temple there.
Right.
So yes, the day will come when, well, here's what happened. There's a man named Joseph Frederick Smith, who was in the Temple Lot Church, and he is the great-grandson of Joseph Smith, the prophet. So an actual great-grandson. He's older. He's 86 now or something. Even I can say he's older. And
which Joseph Smith, the third, the second, or the first?
When I say the prophet, I mean Junior. Joseph Smith Junior, the prophet. So he's a great grandson of Joseph Smith Junior, the prophet. And for about 20 years, he has been trying to reunite the different branches there to get them, instead of fighting each other, you know, have these picky little doctrinal differences. And he is the descendant, and he's Mr. Lineal descendant of Joseph Smith. And this lineal descendancy is a huge point. If there is a lineal descendant who is worthy, righteous enough, and has the lineage, and is called by the Lord, then he has the right, just like it says in the Aaronic priesthood, a bishop, if there's a descendant of Aaron who has the lineage and is worthy and is called, they have the right of first refusal, is what the best way to say it.
To become a bishop.
To become, a bishop or the presiding bishop, and to become the head of the priesthood in the case of the Melchizedek priesthood. This man, Joseph F. Smith, qualified. And Moroni tells Mauricio that that's the man that Mauricio is going to write to in Missouri and say, I know you don't know me, and this sounds crazy, but I've got the gold plates, and I've been told that you'd be interested in that, and if you get one other person at first to come down and see him, because you have the lineage and everything, you
can take over the church, essentially?
Basically, not totally. This is tricky. But you can be, it's like the president of the priesthood of the whole earth. See, the priesthood is separate from a church. Joseph Smith had the priesthood, and with the power of the priesthood, he founded the church. The priesthood comes first. It's outside of a church, but it's required for certain things in the church. It's tricky. So Joseph F. Smith comes to Brazil with a partner, and Joseph Smith had a test. He had the ring. You know, when Joseph Smith gave that speech in Nauvoo and he held up a ring and said, "Eternal, if it has a beginning, it has an end." That ring he had made, I've got a paper on this too, it's a gold, well, he didn't have it made. He had a replica of it made. The real ring, the one he held up in 1840, he didn't wear the real one around. That was the replica he made. But the real ring was given to him by Angel Moroni. And he has this ring. And it's a signet ring. And
Joseph F. Smith.
Joseph Smith, F. Smith, inherited the... Joseph Smith, the prophet, had a ring given to him by Angel Moroni. And it was handed down through the family, to the oldest, to Alexander and Arthur, and to Joseph Frederick Smith. So Joseph Frederick Smith has this gold ring from Angel Moroni, which has a seal. It's a seal ring with the imprint. And he knows the family tradition that on the real gold plates, on the last plate, I whisper, this is all secret. No, it's out now. I got a paper on this. But on the last plate, that ring had made an impression like a seal. On the old documents, you know, you'd have the ring, you put the sealing wax on, you seal it, and it locks it up from the king. So here is on the last of the unsealed plates. The seal plates are sealed. The last of the unsealed, last of the ones that Joseph Smith had, the Book of Mormon. The last of those plates, that ring had been pushed in and made an imprint on it. Joseph Frederick Smith knew that, and he had the ring. So he had a secret way to validate that these are the real thing. And so he goes down to Brazil with another man named Bob Moore. And he didn't even want Bob to even know about this ring because it's a priceless, you know, besides being gold, it's very important. Anyway, he kept it secret. But he went in and met with Mauricio and two other witnesses. So there's three witnesses. And he had got that ring, and it fit. The impression was there on the last page, and the seal exactly fit. And so Joseph Frederick Smith knew that these are, in fact, the real plates. And so that's why he became one of the first eight witnesses. And he put his name on the front page saying, he didn't say that about the ring, but he said he gave his testimony that these are the real plates. Now, there's an interesting story on the ring. While he was there, he lost the ring. And he goes back home, and somehow he forgot this whole experience. And somebody else could say, oh, they're lying in Brazil, but I know that these, the four men, the three men who are witnesses, and I believe them. And I've seen the ring. Here's what happened. He lost the ring, he goes home and forgets this whole thing. And now he says, there never was a ring. That none of that happened. These guys are lying in Brazil. Quite a bit later, Mauricio has a revelation that the ring is hidden in this couch. And the voice is starting to go. And that they've moved three times with that couch. Mauricio had to keep moving because people would come and try to steal the plates. But they were shown that he actually had a vision of where it was because it was crammed down in a crack where the vacuum cleaner wouldn't get it. They found the ring. I have held that ring.
In Brazil.
In Brazil. It was in the couch when Joseph F. was there and had done his tests. Somehow it fell off and it fell into the couch. And it stayed there for actually years, for three or four moves, until just, I think it was just less than a year ago. Mauricio finds it, and Joseph F. Smith is denying that this ever happened, which is good, because now he's not asking for his ring back. And so they have the ring in Brazil. It fits the impression. He has witnesses. Why am I telling you all of this? There was we were going somewhere with this. Well, it's another really good proof that it's all authentic.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. John Pratt. In our next conversation, John will talk about a prophecy in the Book of Mormon that has a different take than you'll be used to.
Joseph Smith III, he goes in 1860. Oh, and he's in the Book of Mormon. That's another thing. In the Book of Mormon, where they read the ancient prophecy of Joseph of Egypt, and he says, one of my seed will be a great seer. And then he said, and there's somebody who'll be named for his father. And we all think, oh yeah, Joseph Smith Jr. is the great seer, named for Joseph Smith Sr. When you look in the sealed book and you listen to what Angel Moroni explains, the first seer is Joseph Smith Jr., the prophet. The second one with the same name is Joseph Smith III. He's actually prophesied in there.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe for just $5 a month at patreon.com/gospeltangents, and you can hear the entire interview before everybody else. If you'd like to watch the entire video for just $8 a month, you can either subscribe on YouTube, Patreon, or my website, gospeltangents.com. Just click the yellow subscribe button, and I'll add you to our Gospel Tangents Insiders group so that you can see entire videos. For those interested in a PDF transcript, you can subscribe at either Patreon or on my website. For just $10 a month, I'll send you a PDF as soon as it's complete. If you'd like a copy of the paperback as well as a PDF, just sign up for $20 a month at either Patreon or my website, gospeltangents.com. Of course, you can buy individual transcripts at amazon.com and just do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview and you can see all the things that we have there. Don't forget to support Gospel Tangents with an awesome t-shirt like one of these. You can subscribe at Apple Podcasts at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. Get our latest updates at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Also, you can get our Twitter updates at gospeltangents. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got more of our great videos. Thanks again.